Are you tired of selling kidney for a laptop? You need to take notes in your family WhatsApp group without your boss thinking you're not working? Tired of explaining something when you could just draw it and share it? How about that back end? Is it heavy laptop related? Let the Mesa Fundi come to your rescue. Hashtag freedom with Fundi. Attach Microsoft Office for the ultimate experience. Make the shift and upgrade to the Mesa Fundi with Windows 10 Professional. The Mesa Fundi, flexibility reimagined. Available online and in store at all leading retailers. Mesa recommends Windows 10 Professional.
What's going on? I can't travel to Durban and I really need to see the team. Our telephone bill is through the roof, our server crashed and we've lost all our files.
Are you getting frustrated with problems in your business? Win at work and calm the chaos with Vox's intelligent business solutions. Work smarter, not harder, and connect your business to the world from 899 Rand. T's and C's apply. Visit vox.co.za for more information.
I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast. I'm joined now by the CEO of a fascinating Cape Town-based artificial intelligence company called Data Profit, which just raised $6 million in funding for global expansion. Now, the CEO of Data Profit is France Crenier, not to be confused, of course, with the CEO of the Institute of Race Relations with the same name. France, it's good to see you, and thanks for making the time to talk to Tech Central today.
Cool. Thank you, Duncan. Glad to be here.
Before we talk about the fundraising, tell me a bit about yourself. What's your background, France, and how did you come to co-found this company?
Yeah, absolutely. To give you a bit of background about myself, so I studied actuarial science back at the University of Cape Town. I then joined Bain & Company as a management consultant, which is a really great experience, kind of gave me a great deal of exposure to kind of just the breadth and width of business strategy. But I really wanted to get much more involved from a technical perspective. So I left Bain and went and studied my master's in statistics, and specifically actually in deep learning, which is a very relevant technology to the work that we do. I think I was particularly lucky in just the timing of it, because right about the time I was studying my master's, a lot of the results coming out of deep learning were coming to the forefront. And that kind of really focused my work there. And towards the end of that, I deliberately left Bain in order to study, become more technical in a field that I thought was up and coming.
Right.
And towards the end of it, I kind of surveyed the landscape, looked around, said, there weren't any good teams practicing AI the way I thought it should be practiced. And at about the same time, a kind of old undergrad classmate reached out to me to say, he'd reached a similar view of that and he felt it's a good time to start a business in the field. We felt we'd consult into the environment until we understood what specific value we can create and build into a product. And really, that's the genesis of Data Profit.
Data Profit. Who did you start the company with?
So it was myself and two other co-founders, Richard Crabe and Daniel Swartzkopf, right? This was back in 2014. It was interesting. We'd actually, when you trace the lines back, we'd all been in the same first year mathematics class at the University of Cape Town, although we didn't know each other then, and we'd been later on kind of connected. I knew Richard through a couple of projects that I worked upon in my master's, and then he knew Daniel through a couple of ventures. Actually, he and Daniel had started together previously.
All right, so you started the business together. What was it like in those early days? It's risky starting a business on your own, right? Was your plan from university days that you were going to start your own company and do this, or did this sort of idea come along later on?
Yeah, it's a good question. I certainly kind of in my undergrad days, it wasn't something that I had thought to do, but kind of as I stepped into the corporate world and then back into my postgraduate, I felt actually quite comfortable doing so. And it is, as you say, there's certainly a point in my career when I was saying, look, I'm 22, 23. If anything, at this age, I can afford to take a good amount of risk with my career.
Right? Yeah.
It's not, and so we delved into it. I mean, it comes with pros and cons being so young, starting that. The nature of the company was that it doesn't start with the first customer. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of startups do start. And so there were kind of some of our initial challenges in those early days, is actually originating that first customer, kind of demonstrating. And a lot of what we emphasized is just really our determination to make this work. And that's how we originated a couple of our first customers. They see quite a young team, not a lot of direct experience in implementing kind of production systems, but kind of a commitment and determination to create something that works. And you kind of, we saw the first couple of customers off the back of that kind of spurt.
All right. I don't know if you can mention names, but if you can't, maybe you can just talk about the implementation you did. Who was your first customer, and what did you do for them?
Okay, so kind of our first customer originated out of the call center space, where, as I mentioned, it's very much an industry driven out of kind of efficiency. It's got a huge amount of data, and it was from kind of a first experience, quite a nice one in the sense that we could have a deliberate impact upon their top line. Right? It's you can see that if we can increase the probability of a sale, they'll realize that nearly immediately. And we learned a lot of good lessons out of that. There's in the spirit of AI, machine learning, kind of there's a lot of buzz, there's a lot of hype around it, and really we wanted to center around kind of being clear on results. And that specific industry, you can set up kind of very clear testing and proof of results upon it. And it was a nice kind of center pin to something that we still continue today upon, we want to be clear on the value we're creating, right? We don't want to sell you on the basis of it being AI. We want to sell you on the basis of this is valuable. The tool we use is AI, though,
Yeah,
to do so.
I suppose there's a risk. It's AI is such a sexy term at the moment that you go in selling that rather than selling the solution that it offers the customer at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. And we see that quite a lot, and we try and stay away from it. Right? So it is really kind of my interpretation, kind of my interpretation of some of this initial work in AI is really kind of it's statistics kind of 2.0. Statistics is having a fantastic run right now, but you can't say that because no one likes statistics. Well, no one trusts them.
Now, the press release that you guys issued about the fundraising last week said that you allow manufacturers to implement, or you produce AI solutions to allow manufacturers to implement autonomous manufacturing. What does that mean exactly? And can you perhaps share some examples of where that technology is being used in the real world?
To talk to the autonomous manufacturing kind of approach that we take in the space is it's again emphasizing that AI is just a tool to realize some outcome. And the autonomous manufacturing is this kind of future state of industry 4.0, right? It's the idea that we can better kind of digitize the manufacturing floor and kind of we can bring much more autonomy to those machines, but we're still a long way out. Because if you can imagine a factory running itself entirely with no lights, no air conditioning, then you've thought of an autonomous factory. And very few of those examples actually exist in the real world, right? Industry's got a long way to get to, but that's kind of the painted objective. Along the way, and this is what we emphasize, is there's a journey towards it. And the technology we provide can provide some of those steps in that space. We talk about augmenting the machine operator to make him better at this job without requiring the expert, who's typically very limited in the space. And some of the practical implementations that we have is we do a lot of work in foundries, gray iron foundries. I've got a piece of iron on my desk. There we've got kind of this strewn around the office. You can imagine melting iron, pouring it into sand molds, right? Very kind of practical, real world space. And in that environment, what we've done is we've implemented our kind of flagship product, DataProfit Prescribe, and it provides recommendations to the machine operators. It's to say, your day to day, you're following a recipe to make yourself an engine block, right? But if you adjust the temperature down on this furnace to this level today, because today is particularly hot, the chance of there being a defect in that engine block at the end of the line has decreased, right? And it's all of these little pieces of instruction. Typically, actually, you might find an expert performing some analysis, giving that feedback. But in today's world, with the machines that are going into these plants, there's more data than the expert can really kind of wrap their minds around. And this is where our AI works very well. It's to say, here, you as the machine operator, please change the temperature here. If you do that, you'll have a better product. And in doing that, we've reduced defects at various different sites. usually on about average of about 40%, and in some sites we've reduced it right down to kind of 0% defects. That's relatively unheard of, especially when you think about Grey Iron, which typically operates at about 5 to 6% defect rate at the end of the line. They have their quality systems to catch and prevent anything being shipped, but obviously they don't want to make that defect in the first place because it's lost time, material, and effort.
I'd imagine that every foundry, every manufacturer has a different setup, though, and is using different technologies. I'm not an expert in this area, so perhaps guide me a little bit here. But do you have to do a lot of customization for your clients when you deploy this technology on the ground?
So you're right. And, you know, there are some good sides to manufacturing, some bad sides when you look at it from a data perspective. Manufacturing as a sector produces by far the most amount of data, which is strange when you start comparing it to telecommunications or banking or government, but it does. The machines there are producing a huge amount of data, but every machine is producing its own piece of data, and it's all quite well siloed. Right. And it's too. That is one of the biggest challenges that we face and the industry faces, is actually this. We talk about contextualizing data, building a unified view, and really kind of uplifting all of the data that is coming out of these machines, and it's been coming out of these machines for the past 15, 20 years, right? Anything that's been put into place will have all of the sensors already on it. It's just a matter of kind of connecting that all together. And so we've had to purposefully design ourselves around quite a modular approach in order to connect into it. And we put a lot of effort into that integration layer, and we have our own installation teams, and we work with partners who provide machines into these manufacturing plants in order to better coordinate those data streams. But it certainly is kind of one of our biggest challenges, and you know, we've done a lot in terms of the development in order to speed up that integration process.
I know in the banking sector, the banks have invested a lot in middleware because they've got a lot of legacy infrastructure that still spewing out data, like in these foundries, for example, and they use middleware software to connect their legacy systems with the newfangled customer facing systems that they're doing. Is middleware an option in the space?
It is, and I think using that analogy, it's not wrong to think about middleware as almost this IoT layer that's going into a lot of factories right now. Okay. A lot of the principal value we see out of IoT when applied to the manufacturing space is really it's just the gateways into these machines. Right? And it's the way to uplift and move that out of a legacy furnace, for example.
Right. Okay. Okay, so where are your customers primarily? Are you're a Cape Town based company, but you're international. Are most of your customers still from South Africa, or are you very much internationalized at this point?
So the majority are still from South Africa. I'd say about 60% or so. Obviously, we've started here and kind of go from where you are very much. And we have been developing internationally. So we now do have customers over in the US, in Brazil, in various different countries in Europe, and we're beginning to kind of through partners reach into Asia as well, which is quite exciting for us.
Okay. So the partner model for your international expansion?
So the partner model for the international expansion is a nice one that kind of we found kind of great value out of. What that looks like from our perspective is we're very good at the AI. The partners that we look to engage with, and some of the partners we have engaged with, and in fact one invested in this round, are the machine builders. Right. So they're the kind of companies that build the furnace or build the machine that makes the car. And we're working with them in order to provide their customers with the AI solution we've built.
Understood. Okay. And that partner is it pronounced Norrison or Norican Group?
It's Norican. And it's an interesting group. It's one of the leading providers of metal casting in the world. So if you're going to build a foundry, you very much likely have spoken to them.
Interesting. Okay. So what are some of the really interesting projects you've worked on since founding Data Profit?
We've worked on a mix because, as I said, we kind of came from this consulting and into product. And that was always our kind of strategy to say we want to develop we want to develop product, but we first need to understand the domain, right? And I can talk about kind of some projects in our distant past where we worked on emotion recognition through the front-facing camera of cell phones in order to kind of improve gameplay and apps, right? And we've done some very interesting things in sentiment and kind of identifying fraud within, you know, the non-underwritten insurance space. And all of these are kind of great opportunities within AI, but really kind of where we are and have been for the past 3 years is in the manufacturing space. And here, kind of, I think the most interesting part for me is the degree to which we can reimagine a lot of their thinking. And so one of our hurdles and one of the kind of a lot of the education we talk about in market is going from a reactive regime into a prescriptive regime. And that's to say, historically in a factory, you know, when something fails, when a defect occurs, then you go about taking action. But here, we can think about a solution, realizing that that is going to occur and you to take action before that failure occurs and never to realize that, right? Which is taking kind of a very old mindset of, okay, we're going to fix it as it falls apart to, okay, we can fix this before it occurs. And so we even kind of go so far to say real time is too late.
Now, politicians love this term fourth industrial revolution or industry 4.0. We hear it. We hear them talking about it all the time, and I suspect they don't really know what they're talking about. But this is real four-eye stuff, right? This is about AI, this is about smart factories, and it's coming out of South Africa. Has it been difficult to build a company like this in South Africa, especially from a skills perspective?
I find kind of one of our strongest advantages is skills and talent.
Okay.
Right? And when I look at and kind of we delve into kind of the typically postgraduate type skill base within South Africa, right? And in that environment, we find kind of talent that kind of can compete and maybe even exceed a lot on the international level. And I mean, we've also got some great advantages in that we don't have almost, you know, the Googles, the Apples of the world who are kind of just pulling all of the A team players into kind of their environment. And, you know, when I talk to my equivalent kind of competitor slash startup over in the States, they can't reach the talent that I can within South Africa. It was simply they are just, you know, the market provides that talent so much more in terms of Google, Apple, kind of career, et cetera. And so we can build a very good team. And I think the team appreciates, obviously, just their own team members working well together there. Right?
Interesting. That's fascinating. Where are you based? Are you one of the startups coming out of Stellenbosch?
So no, we're out of Greenpoint in Cape Town. We're actually in a building called the Foundry. Purely coincidentally, it is an old foundry, right? So we've got all of the. It's purely coincidence that we sit in a foundry in Greenpoint.
Greenpoint. Okay. Great. You've gone through this funding round, which we are going to talk about in just a moment, but and part of that is international expansion. But I believe you plan to stay a South African company. You're going to keep your engineering teams here. You're going to keep your operational teams here.
Yeah. So our intent is to keep the engineering here precisely because we've had this great experience with good talent, right? And, you know, there's a lot more that I can say to it. I mean, even within a European context, we attract very good talent into Cape Town, right? So there's a lot of advantages in keeping our talent based down here. The work we specifically doing in terms of developing, et cetera, can all be done within Cape Town. And then, you know, so keeping that engineering hub here and then I think from the expansion, we'll get into that in a moment, is really focused around building those commercial teams in the markets that they need to operate in.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about this funding round. You've raised 6 million US, which is about 100 million rand, give or take a few million, depending on where the rand is on any given day. It's a round led by Knife Capital, which has actually invested previously in you guys. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And we've had fantastic support with Knife. And I think one of the great things that we're well aligned with Knife is that Knife kind of takes this view when they participate in a company that South African companies are globally relevant.
Yes.
Right. And so this funding round, obviously they've led it through here, but they've been fantastic in terms of support and saying, look, here here as data prophet, it is working internationally. We kind of can provide the local guidance, but we have, as a entity, have a lot of experience in taking companies internationally, right? And you can see that through their own experience in their portfolio.
Yeah. So, do they have representation on your board? Do they get involved in day-to-day operations?
So absolutely participating board and kind of lending a lot of through that board participation, a lot of strategic guidance, which has been kind of really good in just setting, I think, some of our own ambitions and helping us realize them.
You mentioned Norican Group. They've also come in, as has the Industrial Development Corporation. How did those two parties get involved?
Yeah, so when we set about this raise, one of the intricacies of manufacturing is that it is a bit of an obscure kind of hidden market, right? You know, they aren't as accessible as kind of your ordinary internet consumer, right? And so we felt that we should approach this in a strategic manner, right? Kind of take money from people who'd be able to, or kind of strategic investors who'd be able to provide us access to market, right? And experience in market. And, you know, so I've spoke a bit about my background, which is predominantly kind of statistics, not engineering, and kind of bringing some more of that experience into the fold. And so we have quite a long kind of good history with Norican. They see a lot of value in the work that we're doing. And so when we started on this journey around fundraising, they immediately indicated that they'd be interested in participating. And we felt that it was good for strengthening the relationship. And then further to that, then from the IDC's perspective, obviously looking for Industry 4.0 within the context of South Africa. And they, from our perspective, kind of make good sense in the sense that they've got a lot of customers within the manufacturing space.
Yeah.
That is the largest part of their focus. Right.
Okay. Now you've said you're going to use this funding particularly for international expansion. Maybe break that down in a little bit more detail about what you plan to do.
Sure. So kind of coming back to that manufacturing in the markets, you know, obviously the major manufacturing hubs, you know, for better or worse, South Africa is not one of them. The US is a huge one. EU and specifically Germany is kind of a very large manufacturer when we look at the markets that we address within manufacturing, which are predominantly the heavy industries. So you can think about automotive and metals, etc. And so what we're looking to do with this funding is develop kind of local commercial teams to work with partners as well as direct customers in those markets. And we're specifically focusing on those two markets. The EU, from a manufacturing perspective, leads the world in a lot of kind of modern manufacturing thinking, and you can see that in their factories. Like their factories are far more readily kind of capitalized. They deploy new equipment at a much more frequent basis than most other manufacturing hubs. And then outside of that, obviously the US, also a major manufacturing hub, very much innovative driven, right? Very welcoming of kind of new technologies such as ours. And so we saw good fit there, right? And so in the immediate short term, we're looking to build out those offices, represent sales, the necessary technical support into those spaces to develop customers and partners there.
Okay, so putting boots on the ground and actually having offices in those markets. America is such a big country, though. I've spoken to a lot of startups who've gone there and they've said, well, you know, we thought we were going to go tackle the American market, but then we realized actually it's many markets.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right.
So there's the Southwest. How are you going to tackle the US? Are you going to go in and the region?
Yes, it's exactly that point. We've received that advice time and time again. You know, the manufacturing, the Detroit, you know, what's termed the Rust Belt within the US context. They're not a huge fan of Silicon Valley, right? They see kind of all software and all of those technology companies. They're not that keen to talk to them. So we're looking to put roots down in that area in the Detroit, Michigan, Illinois space, specifically to serve customers there and just, to get that recognition. Look, we aren't something out of Silicon Valley, but we are something practical and real. And really kind of that's the main focus. There's some Also kind of heavy industry regions further down south in the Virginia area, when you talk about kind of the metals and the steel industry, it's more focused down south. And so we're looking to reach into the specific regions where our customers are deployed. But the right. biggest first one would yeah. be Detroit and that greater area.
And in the EU?
Within the EU, obviously, Germany leads from a manufacturing perspective, right? But it is quite well distributed, and it's kind of thought of more of a, it's almost more of a single entity than the US
right.
is. Right? So when you talk to an EU company, they will have foundries split across multiple European countries, and travel between the two is not too difficult a thing. And so there's less of this kind of distrust between regions and more kind of fluid movement, and just putting down an office in the area and then traveling to customers is, we view it sufficient.
Yeah. Okay. So Germany, is that where you'll locate your office, do you think?
So we're actually going to locate our office out of Amsterdam.
Okay. Right?
There's some practicality in that. It's from company structuring perspective, it's familiarity with, you know, the commonalities between South African and Dutch law. German law is a bit more complex, and you actually find a fair number of German companies, in our experience, aren't registered and domiciled in Germany, but rather service it from just outside. And then there's the practicality of Amsterdam just being a kind of hub to the rest of the world too. Yeah.
Yes. And did you consider the Far East as well? I mean, what about Japan and China? Is culture and language a barrier there?
So you know, we can't ignore either of those economies. China represents a third of all manufacturing GDP. Yeah. Our view here is we're still very small, right? There are a lot of additional hurdles you need to clear in order to operate in those markets.
Right.
We want to get there, but we're not going to get there in the next 2 to 3 years other than through partners.
Sure.
And so we'll work in that way, but it's more the, you know, the amount of investment required to succeed in those spaces.
Okay. So do you see yourself a couple of years down the line, maybe doing another fundraising round? What is your view of, maybe I should rephrase the question. How do you see Data Profit growing in the next, say, 3 or 5 years? Where do you want this business to be? Does that require additional capital? Maybe just take us through what you want to achieve over the short to medium term.
Yeah, I think if we look at what we want to be from a vision perspective, we definitely want to be recognized as the global leader within AI solutions into manufacturing plants. Right? And I'm emphasizing a lot of those points on the basis that the kind of manufacturing plants as opposed to necessarily the supply chain, et cetera, and when you start segmenting into that. So we definitely kind of have global leadership ambitions. In order to realize that, kind of, there's also part of this is informing our EU-US strategy, where kind of we see obviously EU lead a lot of the thinking there, and through that association, we'll be able to distribute out to the rest of the world. There's a lot of kind of chop right now in terms of where manufacturing is going, and that's true especially in some of the verticals we're working in. So to say specifically, you know, especially given just what we've witnessed, and everyone's had their own experience with COVID, but what we've witnessed is all of these manufacturing plants learning how to stop suddenly and then learning how to restart suddenly. And this is on top of, you know, if you look in the automotive segment, there's huge disruption coming from the electric vehicle environment. There's uncertainty as to, okay, where are those plants located? What do you need to retool in order to support that? And so kind of when I look 3 to 5 years into the future, I'd expect strong Data Profit presence in every manufacturing hub, every one of the major hubs. So that includes China and Japan. But it is and an extension into adjacent kind of verticals. So we're thinking beyond just necessarily automotive and the metals and the mineral processing that we're working in right now. And we're going to pursue that as aggressively as we can, but kind of keep into consideration that I think there's some natural bias in being South African and being a bit more conservative rather than the kind of the raise all the time type mindset that you'll see kind of more commonly coming out of the US.
Yeah. Absolutely right. France, this has been a fascinating discussion. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to Tech Central. France Cronier is CEO of Data Profit.
Thank you. Really appreciate the time.